Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Thursday morning. God, I wish you guys could have heard this last 15 minutes. Fortunately, Jackson was not recording, and maybe unfortunately. Joining us from New York City, who had a birthday this week. I won't say how old because not even he knows. It's Tim Bonteps.
Hello, guys. How are we doing? You can find out my age on Howdy Partners, the show of our co-host on the show here.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, host of Howdy Partners, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy Partners. Man, Bonteps, I appreciate the plug. He was one heck of a guest after the early stumble where he forgot his age by 4 years. How do you, like, a year, two, 4 years he was off?
Well, I do know this. I do know to celebrate his birthday this week, Bonteps went to, I hope I'm not revealing something that you don't want.
No, you're good.
Bonteps celebrated.
My wife told the world anyway, so it's fine.
Oh, did she? Bonteps celebrated at Peter Luger's in Brooklyn. McMahon, have you ever been to Luger's?
I have not. It sounds fancy.
It's the kind of place that should be where my dinner is eventually picked up someday.
Oh, wow. Well, we'll do that when we're in town for the Nets in the finals.
That's right.
It's one of those places, McMahon, where it's cash only. Cash only.
Ooh.
It's cash only, and there's about five things on the menu, and they're all good.
All right.
And the here's what I remember. I hope we're not offending our non-meat-eating listeners, but when they, it's a steakhouse, and I've been to steakhouses all over. McMahon, you're a Texan.
Do you eat meat?
I don't eat red meat.
I know.
That's why I was laughing.
But you've been to steakhouses.
I have been.
They tilt, when they get there, they tilt the steak plate up at an angle so that the juice runs down to the bottom of the plate and you can dip it in the juice. It's quite a technique. By the way, last week on this pod, there was an accusation that Bonteps said a cuss word.
Oh,
that was unedited by Jackson.
Front door.
And you know, I knew Jackson wouldn't miss it. I mean, Jackson's top-notch producer.
I also just didn't curse, so I don't really know where this came from.
He actually didn't curse. He said the word "look," but the way he said it, but the funny thing is, like, in a forensic investigation about whether Bonteps had used a cuss word, we slowed the play way down. I know a lot of folks listen to this at twice the speed, which that makes me anxious. I don't like listening to podcasts at twice the speed.
I listen to some pods on 3x speed, Brian.
I can't take it. It upsets me. I'm not even kidding you. We slowed it down to make sure that Bonteps didn't curse. And the funny thing is, when we slowed it down, McMahon sounded exactly the same.
The draw's ever present.
It was amazing. All right. We talk about the NBA. We're going to start off. Look, I want to be honest. I've been trying to talk about the Thunder in this podcast for the last two or three pods, and they just haven't made the cut because, you know, they're a hard topic to bring up. They're not a contending team. They've been accused of tanking. They're not really tanking. I suspect towards the end of this season, when the you have a better view of where the draft order might be finishing, you might see a maneuver or two that is,
you might see plantar fasciitis sweep across the plains.
Yeah. But they just had this road trip, a Northeast road trip. They won in New York where they put up 145. By the way, the Knickerbockers, who will not be discussed on this pod, just did an altitude sweep, one in Salt Lake and in Denver on back-to-back nights. Jokic missed the game in Denver because he's in protocols. Nonetheless, how about the Knickerbockers getting back above 500? But the Thunder beat them, hung 145. You were at that game, weren't you, Bonteps?
I was.
How about on Sunday, McMahon? Bonteps.
Oh, no.
Went to the...
Dude. Go ahead. No, hold on. Saturday night, he's in Philly.
Yeah.
Sunday, early afternoon, he's in New York for this game. Sunday night, he's back in Philly. The man did a 3-2, bouncing back and forth between two different cities.
Yeah, I but mean, he watched Shea drop 37 in the Garden and then drove down 95.
That's right.
And watched Embiid put up 59.
One of the great performances we've ever seen. And to have 26 of 27 points scored for his team in the fourth quarter. It worked out pretty good for me.
Yeah, also, how many blocks did he have in the fourth quarter?
He had five. He had 26 points and five blocks in the fourth quarter.
That's one of the most dominant performances you'll ever see. I mean, it's a regular season game in November, so I'm not sure it can go down in the historic annals, but still.
It was in the top 10 in basketball reference game score of the last 50 years, basically, pretty since good. I started doing it.
And this is our Thunder talk.
Yes.
Right. Anyway, they won in New York. Then they went up to Boston, and it came down to the final minute in Boston.
Played very well. Led a lot of the game.
Was Jaylen Brown out for that game, or is he back by then?
Jaylen was back for that game, I think. I think he missed the game before.
Okay, came right down to the end.
I can't remember, though.
I watched
either way, they led most of the game, played very well, came down to the end, and they lost.
It's Bontemps birthday week. Do not ask him to recall facts.
On a back-to-back.
Right. All right. Then on Wednesday night, they were in Washington after visiting the White House. It was like a practice visit for their eventual championship. Biden was in Indonesia, but the Thunder were at the White House. And then that was their off day. Then they came into the Wizards arena. I can't remember what it's called, Capital One Arena. And the Wizards has just gotten Bradley Beal back. And by the way, Beal dropped 15 in the fourth quarter, including a maybe aided step back in the last 10 seconds. His guy sort of fell down. He might have
came into
off.
The game with a 4-game winning streak too, playing really
That's
well.
That's right. They'd won 4 in a row. They were playing well. They were 8-6, and Beal dropped 25, including 15 in the fourth. Mm-hmm. And Shea Gilgeous-Alexander drops a 3-pointer on them to win with 1.1 seconds left to finish with 42 in that game.
A career high 42. This dude is averaging well over 30. I mean, he's playing at a superstar level, and you know, you have to include him at least in the fringe of the MVP conversation. Like, hey, you know, if you're filling out a ballot right now, would he be on the ballot?
I think a lot more than a fringe. I think a month into the season, he has to be on the ballot. I'm not saying he's going to be on the ballot at the end of the season.
Well, I don't think you're as of today, one or two. So I'm saying fringe because I don't think he's one or two. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's the MVP, but absolute all NBA. Certainly you've got to consider him for most improved. I mean, this is a guy who we kind of talked about. Hey, this kid's a star. He's playing at a superstar level. Here's a crazy stats and info, Jim. SGA is the second player to record 10 games of 30 plus points with 50% field goal shooting in the first 14 games of a season. Only other guy who's ever done that, Wilt Chamberlain, 1962-63. Now,
when you do something Wilt Chamberlain does, it's a special thing.
Yeah, Luka's got a chance if his next game is 30 plus on 50% field goal shooting to join that. But the point is, SGA is playing at that level right now where he's legitimately playing as well as anybody in the league. He's unstoppable off the dribble. He's got such like his game is such like a combination of like athletic but funky and just like this weird sort of skill. Like, he's so good at like changing direction and changing angles and finishing with whatever hand, and then every once in a while he'll just jump up and dunk on you, or you know, he's got the little pull up pivot, you know, find a way to get his shot off. SGA is the kind of player teams tank to get, and right. and it's funny because the Thunder didn't get him by tanking. They got him in the Paul George trade, obviously, but he's the kind of player teams tank to get.
Let me tell you his last six games. Okay, at Detroit, which they lost by 9, he goes 13 of 23 with 7 rebounds, 5 assists, scores 33 points. Then against Milwaukee at home, they were very competitive, lost by 4. kind of the ideal Thunder game, right? Very competitive against a good team and lose. He played 46 minutes in that game. You certainly can't say that's a tanking line. 13 of 35 shooting in that game, 11 of 13 at the line, 4 assists, 39 points. Then they play in Toronto, which they blew the Raptors out. They played them at home. He only played 28 minutes in that game. So his overall numbers weren't great, but 8 of 14, 20 points. At the Knicks, he goes 13 of 22 for 37. Then he goes at Boston, 13 of 26 for 37. He had 8 assists in both those games, 37 and 8 in both those games at New York and at Boston. And then last night, McMahon mentioned he had a career high 42, including the game winner. And his overall shooting was 14 of 22 again with 6 rebounds, 7 assists. So in terms of his most improved player status candidate last year, which, you know, and by the way, he had a knee injury in the preseason that slowed him down. He was able to kind of start on time, but he missed some of the preseason. But last year, he averaged 25 points, shot 53%, not great from 3-point range last year, shot 30% on 5 a game, but averaged 5 rebounds and 6 assists last year. This year, 31.5. So we'll give him 32. So he's gone from 25 to 32, averaging about the same number of rebounds, about the same number of assists, averaging 2.5 plus steals per game this year, averaging 1.5 blocks per game. That's double what he was a year ago. And here's the most important number and what I really want to highlight. He's shooting 54% from the field. And so how do you get from 45% from the field from to 54%? And that's really where you go from 24 points a game to 31 or 25 points a game to 32. So here's where he's made a difference. First off, he's taking 5 more 2-point shots per game this year than he did last year. And he's taking about half as many threes. He's gone from 6 threes a game to 3 threes a game. Okay. And when you break that down further, last year he took 13% of his shots in the 10 to 16 foot range. That's the mid range. And he shot 44% on them. It's okay. You'd like to have a little bit more, but you know, he's a guard. A lot of them are going to be contested. This year, he's taken a quarter of his shots from the mid range, 10 to 16 feet. And he's shooting 53% on him. He has become a demon in the mid-range. He's hunting those shots. He also, while he's taking fewer three-pointers, he's taking more of them from the corner, where he's making a higher percentage of them. He's always shot the ball well from the corner three, but he hasn't always taken as many of them. So he's taking more threes from the corner, and that has lifted his three-point percentage to 38%. Which is, you know, good. And so right there, Bontemps, you have, if I was going to use a stat analytics term, his change in his shot diet has directly correlated to his improved efficiency and improved scoring and improved output.
Well, he's also taking a lot more shots in the paint in the restricted area, and he's shooting 74% on those shots. Like, his efficiency is up across the board. And look, I came into the season saying Shai was the most underrated player in the league, because I did the poll of the top 6 young point guards in the league last year, included him in it. And he, you know, he wasn't seen in the same light as guys like Luka and Ja and Trey. And me personally, you know, McMahon has talked about the comparisons to Donovan Mitchell before. The biggest reason why I thought this guy wasn't seen in that light was he was playing on a team that nobody was paying attention to because they were trying to be terrible,
and they'd shut him down so they'd lose.
Well, that's the other thing.
He was like, they were going to be way too close to 500 if he played.
That's right. He played 35 games 2 years ago, played 56 games last year. So I wanted to see him on the court and do what he was doing over a full season. But like, you look right now at the way he's playing, to me, there's one point. I mean, I guess if you call Luka a point guard, there's maybe 2 point guards in the league that you take over him. Steph, and if you count Luke as a point guard, Luca.
What do you mean if you count Luke? Luca has the ball in his hands 98% of the time.
Yeah, I'm just saying, well, like, you know, it's the whole, that's the whole, like, you know, was LeBron a point guard during his career thing? I think you'd say Luke is a point guard. I'm just saying, like, to me, it's those two guys. Like, I would probably, you could make an argument going forward, you'd rather have Shea than Ja. He's 4 or 5
inches
bigger.
The NBA probably, later in the season, the NBA will probably say, yeah, you can give Luka votes for all NBA at guard, forward, or center.
Yeah, like, look how often he plays guard 99% of the time.
Well, all right, that's fine. My point was just to say, to me, this guy is clearly in the top 3 or 4 point guards in the league. I'd rather have him than Trey. I'd maybe rather have him than Ja. When you look at his size at 6'6", he could get wherever he wants on the court. You mentioned that mid-range shot. You see over and over, he just sort of, like Paul Pierce, maneuvers his way to the foul line, does a little turnaround, step back, 10-foot jumper, and it's unguardable because whoever's
let's,
on him
let's
is generally...
Let's not talk just about Paul Pierce. Let's refer to something that StatMuse pointed out on Twitter yesterday. This is Jackson who sent this to me. The last guard to average more than 30 points a game on less than 3 3-pointers a game, he's averaging a little bit less than 3 threes a game, was
Michael Jordan.
Oh, Jordan, right.
Michael Jordan was pretty good in the mid-range.
I've got another Jordan comp, a little stat head search that I just did. You mentioned this dude is averaging over 2 steals, a block and a half, just 30 points, 2 steals, 1 block per game. There are 5 names that come up in the all-time database there. Or I'm not sorry, 3 names, 5 times. Michael Jordan did that 3 times, and Dwayne Wade did it once. Now you got SGA. It's early, but that's the kind of season that he's having, and he's leading the league in drives per game. He's just absolutely dominating off the drive, and the crazy thing about it is he's doing it with what I would say is certainly less than ideal spacing. Chip England, the shooting guru that OKC poached off the Spurs staff, has some work to do because, you know, Josh Giddey obviously has to remake his shot. You know, Lou Dort's shot is certainly a work in progress. You know,
still has shown a lot of improvement, Dort.
Check his percentage right now, buddy. 3, boss.
He's a lot better offensive player than he was 3 years ago.
He's shooting 26% from 3, boss.
He's a lot better offensive player than he was 3 years ago.
Sure, that's fine. We said his shot is a problem. His shot is a problem.
Point being, when teams are facing the Thunder, they're saying line one, do not let SGA kill us off the drive. And he's still killing him off the drive.
And the thing that to me puts him on a level above potentially guys like Ja and especially Trey is, like, this guy has the potential to be a very good defensive player. And, you know, over the past couple of years, especially with the team being bad, you know, opposing scouts have noted that, like, the guy hasn't exactly been putting in the kind of effort at that end of the court that they'd like to see. But you look this year, they're 7-9. And he, like you said, he's got a block and a half a game. He's got a couple steals a game. The effort is back at that end of the court. And the ability to be a two-way player like that at that spot with his size and his ability to get to the rim, like, that's just it's exactly what you're looking for in a guard like that. And it, you know, you said at the beginning, man, this is the kind of guy that teams tank for. You know, the Thunder, by starting their rebuild, by making the Paul George trade and getting this guy in the trade, with all the picks, gave them a huge leg up on Houston and all these Orlando and all these other teams that are in the same boat as them, because they already had one of these guys. Yeah. And now they get Chet back next year. You know, he's been on the court recently. He's on this trip. I saw him doing some shooting drills at the guard the other day with Chip Englund. Like, he's got a chance to be a pretty special piece for them. And the other thing is too, like, we're talking about them being bad later in the season. If you look at the Western Conference, we're going to talk about this later. Mm-hmm. If this guy's playing like this, they're just not going to be bad enough to be way down in the dregs at the bottom of the lottery. Like, they might get lucky and jump up from 9 or 10 or something, but I mean, this guy's too good for them to win 25 games or even 30 games, I think, if he is healthy over the course of the season. I mean, he's just doing, like, as you guys have pointed out with all the stats, he's just doing unprecedented stuff.
Well, and you've heard people mention, hey, is SGA the next big name on the trade block? Why the hell would Oklahoma City even remotely consider that? He's 24 years old in the first year of a 5-year extension with no player option. And you know, this thing, you have a talent like that, it's probably time to fast track it starting this offseason. You know, hopefully, certainly that Chet comes back and can be an impactful kind of complimentary player next year. You know, Bontemps, we talked about it on the hit show Howdy Partners that Wendy refuses to watch. You know, you get all those picks, you got this kind of a talent. It might be time to start bundling those and trying to find pieces that to fit around this superstar that you have on your roster, and you know, really try to make a splash going forward. And they're still good. I mean, they've got some extremely valuable picks. They've got a couple of Rockets picks moving forward. Not this year, but you know, I believe it's 24 and 26 plus a swap, right? I mean, they've got some extremely valuable picks. You know, we might be looking up in a couple of years, and the Thunder are a force. They certainly have the guy who can be the foundation of a really tough team.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they would, like anybody else, love to get their hands on Wembanyama or Scoot Henderson, but they may have a player that is better than any player that they could draft in a top five, which you know, as a quick drive by, which is one of the things that I've been talking about a little bit with the Nets as we walk, you know, keep an eye on around December 15th, because in my view, the Nets have until December 15th to decide whether or not they can go forward in this season or not. And what I mean by that is they have the swap rights with the Rockets this year. That is going to be the most advantageous time to have a swap rights with the Rockets, or because the next year the Rockets have their pick, and 2 years from now, who knows where the Rockets swap rights were going to be and who knows where the Nets are going to be. And if you look to make
to be clear, the Rockets have swap rights with the Nets.
Correct. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Saying if you look at the next 4 years, swap with the Rockets this year. Rockets can swap the Nets pick this year. Next year, the Rockets own the next Nets pick outright, no matter where it comes. Year after that, it's a swap rights again with the Rockets. Year after that, it's outright owned. So of those 4 years, as you sit here today, the least penal year
yes.
is this year.
If you're going to bottom out, this is the best year to do it because it gets really painful.
Right. So if you're going to bottom out, you want to do it this year. And if you trade Durant, maybe you can find a trade. Maybe that doesn't return the type of return that Paul George did, but maybe you can get a young player that can you can dream that could turn into Shea that could go along with the pick that you're potentially going to make in the lottery this year. And I don't think they have to make the decision today. And they got a Kyrie situation coming up. They got to see what happens with this team when it gets back together. Maybe they catch fire. I would doubt that because they can't defend anybody. But, you know, but December 15th is when all the players who were signed last year can be traded. So it's the beginning of trade season.
Well, a lot of them anyway.
Yeah, that's – I digress. I'm sorry. I know we don't want to talk about the Nets on here. But it's a as you look at a map of what to do to get yourself out of an expensive team that's not good enough, that's what the Thunder essentially did. Mm-hmm. Although it was instigated by the fact that Paul George said, I want to go, but they got rid of Paul George and Westbrook. And now what they have here is they have the fruit. The player who was already in the league of the Paul George trade now is far and away their franchise player.
Also far and away the best player in that trade. Like, Paul George is a really good player, but SGA is a better player than Paul George right now. And certainly if you're asking who would you rather have long-term, it's a no-brainer.
To put a bow on this real quick, an executive was texting me last night watching the game. He said there's only one player in the league right now that's definitively been better, in his opinion, than Shea this season, who's Giannis. Like, the fact you could argue other people, but like, again, the fact that we're saying like he's on the MVP ballot.
Jason Tatum.
Well, that's what I mean. You can argue other guys,
yeah,
but like you're talking about, he's in the conversation right now with guys like that, like Luka, like Tatum, like Jokic, like Embiid. I mean, he's playing at that kind of level.
Like, but let me just say crazy. One thing is that Shea was drafted, I believe, 12th or 13th.
11th.
It's a lottery pick, a late lottery pick. And he had, he showed promise his rookie year. And what people really liked about him was he was 6'6". He had great length. I don't know what his wingspan is, but it's impressive.
It's long. he's long.
People liked his potential, but I'm not so sure anybody saw this.
Well, no, or he wouldn't have gone 11th. Two spots right after Kevin Knox went to the Knicks, which I believe was mentioned a few times as he was lighting Madison.
It's funny. I saw him play in the, I covered the NCAA tournament in Boise that spring, and he was like 40th. I remember watching their first game, Kentucky, him and Kevin Knox were playing. Kevin Knox was like fifth or sixth, Givoni's top 100, and Shea was like 40th. And he had a crazy first game. I started texting people. I was like, who is this guy? Like, this guy's crazy. 6'6", long guard. By the end of the, the second weekend of the tournament, he was up to like, I don't know, 12th or something. Like, he skyrocketed late in the season. But yeah, he was a raw. He's from Canada. I mean, again, we keep talking about all these Canadian players. You look at Nick Nurse over the next couple of years with this guy and Jamal Murray and Andrew Wiggins, Lou Dort. Like, they're going to be, they just qualified for the World Cup last week. Like, they're not going to be an easy out for
Dwight Powell. Tournaments.
Dwight Powell. Dwight Powell, they really need him. They have no bigs. Need Dwight to play.
Well, I just wrote a piece that published on Tuesday about the French national team because over the weekend, last Friday and Monday, Wembanyama played for the French national team for the first time. And now this was not top talent. If you follow the way the team, the U.S. men's national team qualifies for the World Cup in soccer, where like multiple times per year, like all the soccer leagues in the world shut down, everybody goes to their home country and they qualify over the course of 2 years. This is what they also do in basketball, only like a lot of countries and leagues, the biggest leagues in the world, specifically the Euro League and the NBA, don't shut down for it. So
24-hour fitness shuts down. And so they get a bunch of guys to go out there.
Team USA is like scrounging up a team. Like the names that you would have heard of on the team that just played in the US qualification included like Rodney Hood. He was on the team, and I'm trying to think.
Rodney Hood. All right.
Langston Galloway was on the team and some other guys who were on loan from G Leaguers. But Wembanyama's team, which his professional team, which is outside Paris, they are coached by the French national team coach, Vincent Collette. And big surprise, his team did shut down and let Wembanyama and Collette go play in the French qualifier. And they played against Lithuania and Bosnia, and Wembanyama was dominant. He's
hitting runner threes, like off dribble runner threes, like smoothly. It's ridiculous. Yeah. At 7'12" or whatever he is.
Scotty Barnes hit one of those one legged step back threes last night, late in the shot clock. Said, "Oh, he did a Victor." I was like, I hadn't seen it before. It's amazing.
Victor, I spent a couple of hours the other day translating some French quotes from Victor. He got asked about that shot, and I just felt that his answer was really, really good about that shot. So I will, this is translation from Google and me as I was trying to put it together.
Will you do it in a French accent?
No, I wish I could, but I'll get mocked. This is what he said about that. And if you haven't seen it, you can, he did it in a French league game about 2 weeks ago where he basically, it's like, what would you say, McMahon? It's like a half Dirk, half Kobe.
Yeah, it's not a fadeaway. It's like I said, it's a runner from legit NBA 3-point range.
But like he shoots it kind of like Kobe, like, you know how Kobe would like float, but he runs into it and shoots off one leg like Dirk.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody smarter than me could come up with a nickname for it, but here's what he said. Quote, a basketball player is like a chess player. You have to be able to anticipate every move your opponents are going to make and know that they're going to have a response because adversaries always adapt. I have been working on this move for months. I want to be able to become indefensible or something like that, I think is the French word for it. I remember when I was looking at it, I just saw the word indefensible at the end. And I was like, you ain't kidding. I'll translate that right now. That's an indefensible shot. So
he's pretty good.
You know what? I remember when Harden a couple years ago during like summer pickup runs, you know, you see like the videos to get put out on social media, and he was hitting a bunch of these one-legged threes. And I remember asking him about it, and it was kind of like a thing going into the season. And then I remember asking D'Antoni about it. D'Antoni goes, he doesn't have trouble getting his shot off. This is all ridiculous. And I'm as interesting as this shot is from Victor, he's 7'3", 7'4". No one's blocking his regular shot. Like, he doesn't have to do this.
I'm just studying him, and I'm more and more fascinated with him. Anyway, the World Cup is next year in the Philippines. A couple of the better American players have indicated they want to play, Bradley Beal and Trae Young. And then obviously the Paris Olympics, where Wembanyama and Gobert.
And who knows where Embiid's going to play.
And Joel Embiid is going to be, I described it in my column as a low key, high level recruiting effort because Embiid just became an American citizen.
I wouldn't say
and it's a French citizen somehow.
I wouldn't say it's going to be low key. I would say nothing involving the big fella is low key. If I had to guess, I would guess he doesn't play at all. But
I mean, he's just so many of these summers he's recuperating from injuries.
Yeah. But so it's hard. But if he decides to play, I mean, a Gobert, Embiid, Wembanyama front line would be fascinating to just watch, period.
Wembanyama can play shooting guard.
Well, that's Wembanyama, what I mean. You could have them all on the – certainly Embiid and Victor could space the floor. I mean, that ain't an
this
issue.
This is the thing about Wembanyama and Chet Holmgren, who's got a similar skill set. He's not the shooter that Wembanyama is. These guys are not necessarily bigs. Wembanyama is going to play on the wing. Not all the time, but he's going to be kind of a wing player. So, it would be awkward to play them together, but you could. Yeah, but I think if you're
not in FIBA ball, man, you could just run a 2-3, have them all on the baseline, and then have Holy those guys Moses. Shoot it.
Holy well, that Moses. Thing with women.
And from the FIBA line, that's closer, too. It's not even like you're shooting NBA threes.
The basket defense, forget it. Forget it. I'm just saying, like, you know, I know that where we are with Team USA is we only really notice them when they lose. And let me just say that, like, you know, people are taking pot shots at Durant these days, and I'm hearing people talk about, you know, taking shots at his legacy. And, you know, he gave an interview to the Bleacher Report after they lost by 100 the other night in Sacramento, and he was talking about his legacy. Part of Durant's legacy is that he carried Team USA to a gold medal in Tokyo. And again, I know that the average sports fan may not even remember. It was like, oh, did we win that gold medal? We did. Cool. Whatever. And they don't think
about
it.
Remember if you lose it.
That's right. Yeah. I'm telling you, it is a pole in Durant's legacy that he delivered that gold medal for the Americans. And it took Durant's greatness to beat the French in the final. And the French are going to have Wembanyama, and they're going to be playing in France in 2024, and the Canadians are going to potentially have Shea and Dort and Wiggins.
I mean, they could have a full roster of NBA players. They could have 12 NBA players by then, right? Shaden Sharp is Canadian. I mean, they got talent.
Talk about
all
Shaden
over the
Sharp
place.
In a minute, if we can ever get to the next part of this.
Well, you decided to turn this into a Victor.
I know.
Speech.
I didn't say it was. It was me. I would make every pot about Victor if it was up
when
to
he was
me.
Promoting his own work. Check out the Hoop Collective column that ran earlier this week.
That's right. We got promotionists everywhere.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. All right. So when we got back to this, we were talking about the Clippers trade. Let's talk about the Clippers real quick. They're playing tonight. Who are they playing tonight?
Is Kawhi playing tonight?
Great preparation, host.
Well, we're always behind. It's only three games.
They're playing the Pistons tonight. Playing All Detroit. Right.
I don't know what's going to happen in this game. Maybe they win by 50 and everything's great. Maybe they lose by 10.
Beating the Pistons by 50 doesn't make everything
also
great.
Also, pretty sure Cade isn't playing, so it even takes another knock off of that.
Okay. Yeah. So the Clippers are 8-7. And McMahon, you just were at their game in Dallas a couple days
ago. Yeah, and they almost came back from 20, or they came back from 25 down, weren't able to finish it out. Second half of back-to-back. You know, wasn't a bad performance, but it's just this Kawhi thing is, I mean, it's normal in that it's weird with Kawhi, right? Like, what's going on with him? Now, he was on the trip. There's murmurs, hey, Kawhi might be coming back. I get the feeling that the Clippers really are just kind of in the dark and awaiting word from Kawhi. That,
like,
hey,
Kawhi could come in today against the Pistons. We're out of date here. He could say, I'm going to play tonight.
Yeah, and it's I don't know that they know a whole lot about what exactly is going on. And you don't want to push it because you saw how that played out in San Antonio. You don't want to ask too many questions or make them feel like you're doubting him or whatever the case may be. But it's obviously the guy is coming back from a serious injury, but he missed a full year. Goes through camp, shows
Look,
up.
He got re-hurt, right? Like Ty Lue twisted himself into a pretzel trying to make it sound like everything's A-okay. He came back and played two games and now he's missed a month.
Right.
So don't tell me everything's A-okay. I mean, and I don't even blame Ty. I'm not even saying he's trying to be he is being evasive, but he's trying to protect the relationship. He's trying to protect the player, but don't tell me that everything's fine, that he didn't have a setback or whatever. He hadn't played for a month. Clearly he has something happened there.
Whether he got hurt or not, he played two games in very bizarre fashion coming in the middle of the second quarter. The coach was clearly not happy about it, made it known at the time. And then he's now disappeared for a month and we have no idea why.
And, you know, Kawhi, I was talking to somebody with the Clippers before he was shut down. And they said, man, he's huge. Not that he's out of shape, but like Kawhi came back looking like a pass rusher. Like they were concerned that he's too muscular, too big, there's too much weight on those legs. I don't know if that has anything to do with whatever has shut him down for a month or not, but it's just a weird situation where they don't know when, if, how much Kawhi is going to be available for them. And so you're talking about a team that, you know, went in the season. There was a lot of talk about, hey, the Clippers might be the best team in the NBA. They might, you know, they're probably the best team in the West, this, that, and the other. And they're just a kind of a mystery at this point.
Yeah. So speaking of Canadians, Jamal Murray, he tore his ACL. And he has less history of, leg injuries than Kawhi. He tore his in April of 21. Kawhi had his injury in June of 21 in the middle of that series with the Jazz. Just to remind you about how cautious, cagey, obfuscation that the Clippers have to be about Kawhi. If you remember, he tore his ACL. And they basically had him on the game as like questionable or day-to-day. He had torn ACL because they, you know, and I know that there was some story there, but I'm just saying, like, anyway, Murray tore his in April. Kawhi tore his in June. Jamal Murray is playing okay.
Yeah.
For the Nuggets. He's averaging 16 points. He's
slowly knocking the rust off.
Yeah. He's just looks okay. He looks like a guy who has had a lot of time down and is working his way back. So Kawhi is well behind that schedule. And he's as cautious as any player with an injury that I've ever seen in the NBA. So even if he pronounces himself ready to go in at the 6-minute mark of the second quarter against Detroit or in the next few days, I don't know what you're going to see from him. And really, Bontemps, the Clippers have no choice but to go with this. They, you know, like I have been very much critical of the way the Nets have handled Kyrie.
I was just going to say.
They have let Kyrie totally get away with stuff and totally be out of control. And so they've reaped what they sowed there. In this case, I'm not sure the Clippers have a choice. The Clippers are so invested and he's so freaking good. Let's not forget the last time he was healthy, that series with the Mavericks, McMahon, that was as dominant of a performance as you. I mean, that's why you
six.
Do this.
Game six, he has 40 some odd points and smothers Luka down the stretch. Holy, I mean, yeah, the guy can multiple time finals MVP. That's the kind of player that he is when he's healthy, when he's available, and you know, when he's fully invested.
Look, this team is Nets West, but that's what they are. They're Nets West. They're a better version of it in the sense that they're more stable and they put on a better face of it. They handed the team over to Kawhi Leonard. They traded Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and every pick known to man to get Paul George. So Kawhi would come there. He said, hey, I'll come here if you trade for this guy. They said, yes, sir. They went and did it. And as you said, Brian, at every step, they have catered to what he's wanted at every turn. He lives, you know, down, I think, in San Diego, basically, where he's from.
Riverside, I think, area.
You know, but it's far away from L.A., yeah. You know, they've certainly, I mean, this whole, what you're going to come in the middle of the second quarter thing clear. I mean, you know, Ty, as you mentioned before, is usually pretty evasive, but he made it pretty clear. I don't remember exactly when he said it early in the season, but he's like, yeah, there's no way for us to get any rhythm when we're having this crazy substitution pattern. Like, you know, but this is what Kawhi wants to do. So they said, okay, we're going to do it. And it doesn't come with the same fireworks in many ways that the Nets have for all sorts of reasons, but at the end of the day, it's no different. And frankly, they haven't had any more success. And, you know, yes, I watch Kawhi win a finals MVP in Toronto. We all saw him play in San Antonio. He had that, you know, he's been incredible at times for the Clippers in the playoffs, but I don't know what version of this guy is coming back from this knee injury. Like, I don't know if that guy's coming back again. And if he doesn't, this team has no shot. Like they were built with the premise that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard were going to be two of the best 10 or 15 players in the league. And Kawhi in particular was going to be one of the best players in the league again. If he's not that guy again, this team is cooked.
Yeah. Well, I would argue about they haven't had any more.
Yeah. Well,
I was going to say they've gone to a couple conference finals. Yeah.
They got there once, right?
Once.
Twice. Yeah. Twice.
Once.
I'm sorry, one semis, yeah. And one finals. Right. You're right.
Right.
I mean, the lost one is they're up 3-1 in the bubble on the Nuggets. You know, I mean, people all denigrate the Lakers, which is ridiculous. Lakers had the number one record in the West when the season stopped. They had the number one record in the West after the bubble games. They had the number one seed in the West. They won the West, whatever. But we were denied the opportunity to see a real Lakers Clippers series there. You know, we'll never know what happened that year, but when they made the West Finals, Kawhi was hurt.
Right.
So we really have never gotten to see them. You know, I have said, I've qualified this as it's a basketball travesty. I'll say it again. It is a basketball travesty that Harden, Kawhi and Durant never got to play together and have a real chance at even one fair bite at the apple, because who knows what that threesome
Harden Kyrie.
What'd I say?
A Harden Kawhi.
Say Kawhi.
I'm so sorry. Like, yeah, I heard Sir Bontemps go, what? I knew I was in trouble.
No, I was just Kyrie. Trying to follow. I was, me and McMahon were doing the same thing. We were trying to follow what you were saying.
Right. I was like, when was that going to happen?
Too many K players. Harden, Kyrie, Durant, basketball travesty that never even got to have one bite at the apple. That we have not gotten the Lakers Clippers showdown. And now the Lakers are, they're washed out to sea, and the Clippers just still haven't gotten it together. I mean, what we thought we were going to have in 2019, it just hasn't materialized. It's probably a lesson about overreacting to, you know, stuff that happens in so super team building.
Spotlight but. Versus streetlights. Still haven't seen it, baby.
LAR way is the way that the Clippers put it.
Can't believe you delved so far into Lakers coverage in this pod. I thought you were
we've made a lot of drive-by references in this pod. We've been a little all over the place. It's been my fault, but I don't care. I'm doing three pods a week right now. It's hard to keep it together. Nice.
Whoa, too much look who's working hard.
Too much work. Too much work.
The Clippers have no choice at this point. They're in for a penny, in for a pound. They pretty much have to go to his whims because they're not going anywhere unless he comes back and is focused. And so in November, you got to just sit there and take it. But it doesn't mean that we can't sit there and say this is dysfunctional.
And so we come into the season. Obviously, the Warriors are the defending champions. The Clippers are getting Kawhi back, or so we thought. And so I think pretty consensus opinion was, hey, those are the two best teams in the West. We're at the point now where I'm like, who is the best team in the West? Who are the really good teams in the West? Are there really good teams in the West? And when do you have didn't take long to find them on the standings, but you've got one team that you are believing in.
Yeah, and I see your Howdy Partner stuff. You're trying to take over as the host here. And I appreciate what you're trying to do.
I'm doing you a favor and trying to get this damn thing on track, knowing that you've got an appointment here.
You
want to
talk about the Blazers.
Minutes.
As I pointed out earlier when I was on his thing earlier this week, McMahon tried to declare that one of our egos had run amok, and it wasn't him, which I was very amused by on it.
I don't even know how to spell amok.
Before the Blazers, do we have trivia?
I make trivia. Such a smooth segue, and you yank it back to give it to
Bonner. That's what I'm saying. Well, let me do the segue.
This is a bunch of segue there. Damn,
handle
man.
Your own show. Take care of your own show.
You're not the host, McMahon.
We had
settle
a freaking
down.
Shot stay, clock violation.
Stay, come on. Stay in your lane.
Come on. My answer is the 1956-57 Warriors.
That's incorrect.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
4 years ago today, Kemba Walker scored 60 points against the Sixers. Wild because he's now currently not in the league, even though he's in the last year of a max deal. Who is the only other 6 foot player in NBA history to score 60 points in a game?
Under 6 foot. Or six foot.
Yeah.
Did Isaiah Thomas score 60 points in a game?
He was 6'1", I want to say. Or probably still is. Tiny Archibald.
Mo Williams scored 50. He didn't score 60.
He's taller than 6 foot too. Tiny Archibald ain't it, huh?
Nope.
Damn. Iverson was taller than 6 foot. Damn.
It's a good question.
It is.
Who was the leading scorer on the 56 Warriors?
Courtesy of Stats Williams.
I am.
Iverson.
It was Iverson.
No, he's tall. He's taller than 6 foot, isn't he?
No, he's not.
He's not.
He's definitely not. He's listed at 6 feet.
And neither is Mo Williams. Well, I love you, Mo. But
the answer is
Mo
Iverson.
And I have talked many times. We look at eye to eye. That was a good one.
Right,
I'm sure many people on the pod were screaming, Iverson, Iverson, Iverson.
Yeah, I was going to say Iverson. Then McMahon was like, ah, he's taller, and he moved on. So I was going to let it sit for a minute and say it right. Actually was Iverson.
Okay, I didn't hear McMahon say Iverson.
No, it's all good. You got it right.
All right, well, Dame Lillard is taller than 6 foot, but he's one of the shorter dominant all-time players, and that dude's had 60-point mm-hmm. games. The Blazers are the Western Conference's number one team by record. Mm-hmm. And that would have to be classified as a surprise, would it not?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And, 15 games does not make a season. But I will also point out that this team potentially has more upside this year because, one of their key offseason moves was to sign Gary Payton. Not that I think Gary Payton II mm-hmm. will come in and all of a sudden dominate, but they have that guy who's, I think, soon to make his debut.
Well, and I will only say as you get wound up, Brian, you say 15 games doesn't make a season, but oftentimes you go back and look over the course of history, 20% of the season is generally a pretty good sample for what the final standings are going to look like. So it doesn't seem like it's that far, but we are 20% of the way into the season, and these guys look awfully good.
Well, you know what else is another pretty good indicator is net rating. And credit to the Blazers. They've had, I believe, three last few second game-winning shots, but they do rank 7th in the West in net rating, which is my way of saying, no disrespect, but I still don't look at the Blazers as a legitimate contender.
No, has a better net rating than the Portland Trail Blazers? The Sacramento Kings.
Yeah.
The streaking Sacramento Kings. In part Mark because Spears, they beat the Nets Sacramento by Kings. 1,000.
That helps.
How about the Sacramento Kings? How about Spears doubling down on the Kings before the Nets game? Doubling down on the Kings going to make the play. And by the way, I gave him a window out during that pod that published on Wednesday. I said, you don't mean the play-in. Yeah, you're either going to make the playoffs.
And I heard
that playoffs.
I heard. Playoffs. I listen to shows that I'm not on that my friends do.
Thank you.
And also that you do. but here's the thing where I think I did certainly underestimate the Blazers. They are actually a better in terms of league rankings. They are a better defensive team than offensive team right now. And I think they have a chance to be a solid defensive team just because, I looked at it, I said, hey, Dame with another small guard, we've kind of seen that before. It's going to be a struggle. But, man, they've got, you talk about Jeremy Grant, who's been a great fit, is playing at right around an all-star type of level, is kind of a complimentary scorer, is averaging 20 a game, but also a guy who can really – defend and be versatile there. Josh Hart's a really versatile defender. Even a guy like Justice Winslow coming off the bench. Certainly when Gary Payton II's ready to play, we know what he can do defensively. I think they have kind of assembled this group of like these long, rangy, versatile defenders around their small guards that they're better on that end than I gave them credit for, and also give Chauncey Billups some credit for figuring out how to employ those guys.
So one of the other things is we're still learning about Shaedon Sharpe, their number one draft pick. But one of the things that is kind of apparent from him is that he wants to defend. He has a defender's mindset, which is not something you normally see from a 19-year-old. That's one of the things I talked to some people who follow the team and know the team well. And that was one of the things that they said have really impressed the team internally is that Shaedon Sharpe has come in there. And obviously he has great athleticism, great physical tools. So mm-hmm. you feel like you can teach a player that. But Shaedon Sharpe has his some of his most significant impact. And by the way, he shot the ball really, really well. He's shooting 53% overall. And he's taken a fair amount of three-pointers and is shooting high 40s. That's obviously been something that's very noticeable in what he's done. This is a guy that they tanked for, was to get a player like this.
They end up higher than 7, but he was they were happy but to get still, him at
that's
7.
Who they got.
Yeah.
And the other thing is you mentioned Winslow in passing. He was kind of a throw-in in that trade to get to do the deal to trade to get off out the money, CJ basically. McCollum. Yeah, to move McCollum. Hart, it was basically for, you know, they sent out Nance in the deal as well, Larry Nance.
No, no, this was a separate. He was from the in the Clippers deal. This is the one where they dumped Powell and Covington.
Right. Yeah, you are correct. Sorry. Right. Very good. Thank you for my back there. But anyway, Winslow was kind of seen as a
yeah,
as sort of a throw in, and he's actually been a very versatile defender for them, which is what he has been in the league. But his, you know, his value has kind of has ebbed and flowed. And let me ask you this, Bontemps. So Jeremy Grant, one of the reasons why the Pistons traded him was because they weren't crazy about extending his contract or giving him another contract.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He is averaging 21 points, shooting 51% from the field, shooting 49% from three on 5.5 attempts a game. I can't see that keeping up, but he's...
I would say that's a safe bet.
That's still... I mean, he's shooting the ball great. He obviously is a versatile defensive player. He is eligible to be extended in January. He's playing great.
Mm-hmm.
Do the Blazers extend him in January?
I think the Blazers will certainly want to extend him in January. Right. I'll be curious to see if he does extend to January with a lot of teams having cap space next summer. But look, I mean, he's played really well. I mean, it's been a really good start. I think the two things that I have a little bit of concern about with them, just looking through their numbers, like obviously it's been a terrific start. Chauncey's done a great job. Look, we talked about it. I don't know if we talked about it on the pod or not, but man, you know, I think summed it up by saying that, you know, I certainly, and I think we all did, sort of thought they were in purgatory coming to the season, right? Like they're kind of stuck.
100%.
They're in the play-in mix. Like, you know, they've got Dame under contract, but like, where are they really going? And now it looks like they at least have some real upside to be better than that. I'm a little skeptical this defense could stay where it is. Like if they could just be somewhere in the top 12 on defense, they got a chance to be a pretty darn good team because their offense should get better. Dame's missed a bunch of time and they're still that high up. Now, the other thing is they have a lot of guys shooting way over their head from deep. Like Jeremy Grant has never shot over 39%. He's shooting 49, like you said, at 5.5 attempts a game. Nasir Little shooting 43%. Shaden Sharp shooting 47%. You know, Nurkic is on a very small volume hitting 55%.
Well, Shaden Sharp never even missed a three in college.
That's right. That's right. Didn't have to take one.
He didn't miss a shot in years before he
missed season. So, I do think there's some stuff there overall that you have to wonder if it's going to come down. But look, you guys laid it out. Justice Winslow, if now healthy, has always been a good defensive player. Josh Hart, good defensive player. Grant is long and athletic. Yusuf Nurkic is a really good rim protector. Like, they have to keep their guys healthy. Like, they don't really – like, Drew Eubanks is their only other big on the roster. If Nurkic goes down, they're in a lot of trouble. But Dame looks good. They've done a nice job putting athletes around him. And like we've talked about a bunch, you look at the Western Conference, the Warriors are a tire fire. All these other teams have injuries and are dealing with stuff. I mean, like
they got Steph Curry. You're not a tire fire. You got Steph Curry.
They've got a 6-9 record, 0-8 on the road. I know.
Steph Curry scored 50 points in Phoenix and they got blown out. They're a tire fire, boss. They got things to figure out,
boss.
Come on. They're a tire fire.
Well, I will say Chauncey has done a good job of getting them to play with a more defensive mindset. And Joe Cronin, who got that job as the general manager under duress, had to live with an interim title for months on end, but yet still had to make moves. I mean, you look at the players on this roster that are making contributions, they're Joe Cronin moves.
Well, and when they made that McCollum deal, the pick protections, it broke just right on the Pelican side of things. So they didn't get exactly what they were hoping for there. But as Bobby Marks pointed out in the Hoop Collective weekly column, basically when you look at that trade, Jeremy Grant's part of that trade. You know, he's a ripple from it, but he's Jeremy Grant. You know, they used trade exception, you know, the pick they get via Milwaukee to go out and get Jeremy Grant. So if you're looking, hey, Jeremy Grant, Josh Hart, like that's looking like a pretty good trade, especially when they knew, hey, Anfernee Simons is going to be our long-term starting two guard. We're going to have to pay him, all those sorts of things. I still do question in terms of can this be a contender? I do question two small guards. They were really good with CJ. They weren't good enough to get over the hump. I and especially like Dame and Simons, they're a negative net for the year as a duo on the floor together. You know, Simons is really, really good. And, you know, when they just came through Dallas and I asked Chauncey about him, and one thing Chauncey said was Dame being hurt last year was a gift to Simons because it was like no pressure, no expectations.
It was a gift to a $100 million contract.
Right. But he got the experience of being the guy, right? And basically, yeah. Hey, sink or swim, and his game blossomed. But again, I do still have questions about the ceiling of that duo together.
Yeah, I agree. It's but fair. The other thing, too,
listen,
to
if
your
they
point,
even make the playoffs this year, yeah. It's a great accomplishment for more.
No,
than
for sure. For sure. And to your point earlier about the Nets, Brian, like the way that Joe Crona was able to remake this roster, it is a way to look if you're the Nets and you're looking at this, like you take this year, you rework things around Kevin Durant. You maybe set yourself up to have some cap space next summer. You get a high draft pick. You could have a good team as soon as next year if you do it right. It's not an easy thing to do, but it is doable. And like you said, Portland is proof that it is a possible path to take.
So, and we've gone this long, we really haven't talked about Dame. Dame is back. He's
Dame is balling.
Averaging 28 points, shooting 46%, hitting his threes. Has had a couple of games where he went straight, pure Dame time. My
Made a
son
huge block to win a game the other day.
Yeah, I know. You never saw that before. My son, whose name is Dane, we were watching that game against the Lakers where Dame time was in full effect. And he was, you know, tapping his wrist when he won that game. My son fell in love with Dame because he loved when he was tapping he's only four, but he already really much he was watching that game with me, and he very much was attracted to the long range shooting and then tapping the wrist for the time. Awesome. So the dude's
fun to watch, man.
He is super fun, for man. Sure. He's awesome. It's great to see him back and healthy. I mean, obviously he had the surgery last year on the adductor thing, and you know, you have a guy who's in his early 30s. He has that surgery. You sort of wonder, all right, like, is he actually going to come back the same as he was before? Are we starting to see the decline?
And he didn't look great in the preseason. I'm going to be honest. He didn't look great in the preseason. I was worried about it. And people told me, stop worrying about him. I'm like, okay, but he's 32 and he's coming off of surgery. And they were right because he is.
Lights came on. He looks awesome.
Yeah, he does. So, you know, I don't know. The Blazers are a little fragile. I suspect they'll come back to earth a little bit, but they're also getting Gary Payton probably the next few days. So,
yeah, and they've done all this on defense without him. That's a huge weapon for them to have back.
You mentioned this real quick, Bontemps, but I do think that they might need another big on this team. Nurkic's numbers are okay, and they signed him to a pretty significant contract in the offseason, but there have been times where he's let them down a little bit defensively.
What did Jakob Poeltl do against him the other night?
Well, that's the thing. Jakob had 31. I think
Brian's trying to trade Jakob Poeltl to every goddamn team in the league. Every podcast I turn on, he's on. He's like, oh, you know, Jakob Poeltl is Celtics, Jakob Poeltl the Blazers,
man,
Jakob Poeltl everywhere.
I mean,
I'm just saying,
if the Spurs want a chance at victory, they better trade Jakob Poeltl.
Wait a minute. You just talked over him. Now you're saying Jakob Poeltl the Warriors. Like, just send him everywhere.
I'm just saying that's a guy who could really help a lot of teams.
I understand. It's just funny. You've now traded
it's a fair assessment. I keep talking about Jakob Poeltl, but
so when he's trading,
I talked
Jakob
about
Poeltl
him the other
everywhere.
Day, and then he had 31. I mean, I'm casting the freaking, you know, the freaking angel of death on all these teams I'm talking about. They're falling like crazy. I did a feature on the Cavs last week. They haven't won since. Okay,
so Wendy wants to trade Jakob Poeltl everywhere. I want to trade Eric Gordon everywhere, and Bontemps wants to trade James Wiseman everywhere. Wow. We'll see who gets that done first.
Wow. Well, hopefully for the Warriors' sake, it's me.
The difficulty for the Blazers in any sort of trade is that their first round picks are encumbered because they made the deal to get Larry Nance from the Bulls and that Bulls Cavs Markkanen trade. Yeah. And their picks are encumbered. So they do have some potential pieces to trade, but they don't, they can't trade their pick. So I don't know
if they wanted to make trades, they could make that pick unprotected very easy. It's lottery protected. They could just do it unprotected this year and be done.
That's a risk. So
no, it is, but if they're trying to make a trade like that, you'd assume they're in the playoffs and then they're going to give up the pick anyway. So
that's true. Good analysis. All right. We've gone on long enough. Thank you, Bontemps. Hope you enjoy the rest of your birthday week. Thank you, McMahon. And I got to go watch this thing that you guys did on Howdy Partners. Apparently there was some venom between the two of you.
The whole world needs to watch it, baby.
Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Oh, real Howdy quick. Me. Oh, next hey. Week. Oh, wait, sorry. Sorry
more.
To cut you off.
There's more.
Sorry to cut you off. So next week is Thanksgiving windy. Week. As you know, things are a little different on a holiday week. Last year, we did our first annual Friendsgiving. We came out with all of our folks got together and we had a fun time and we brought it out for everybody who wanted to travel, needed to travel over the holidays. So clear your podcast listening schedule. The second annual Friendsgiving will be out next week in time for your Thanksgiving travels. And we'll decide whether you two are going to be included.
I was going to say, I have no friends in our company. What are you talking about? Okay, but having said that, adios amigos.
Thank you.